time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. This is our show for January 5th, 2019, our first show of the year. I hope you had a great holiday season. If you made a New Year's resolution, or maybe even multiple resolutions, may I be the first to say, meh, I figure if I don't make them, I can't break them. On the other hand, the January weather has been good so far, rideable. I'm thinking climate change here in Northeast Ohio isn't so bad. Anyway, our show this week highlights two great guests. We've often talked about organizations that help veterans, but we haven't spoken with someone who has experienced what our first guest has. National Guard Sergeant Mark Green was injured while on deployment. He suffered serious damage to both of his feet and what he calls a, quote, minor TBI, end quote, as if there is such a thing. All TBIs have consequences. Forced to retire, Mark has spent many, many months rehabbing from surgeries to his feet, as well as dealing with the brain injury that has left him with a stutter in his speech. Although he never saw himself as a cyclist and even professed to never, ever put on a Lycra kit, today Mark is riding a specially built hand cycle and getting ready for a 100-mile event later this year. And he's wearing his Hope for the Warriors kit. Mark will be with me to share his story in a moment. After our break, it's off to Portland, Oregon to speak with Tony Pereira of Breadwinner Cycles. Living and working in the bicycle mecca of Portland, Tony and his partner Ira Ryan build beautifully handcrafted bikes in a variety of styles. Last year, they also opened the Breadwinner Cafe, where you can sip an espresso or have a beer and watch the process as they build their custom machines. So it's off to North Carolina to meet retired Army Sergeant Mark Green. Hi, Mark. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Happy New Year, and thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited to be here. I've been looking forward to this ever since I found out that you wanted to talk to me.
Your intermediary, Mike, who was gracious enough to send me all the information, and it's such an interesting story. It's a great way for us to start our new year. So begin by telling us a little bit about your background leading into your military service, and then we'll get to what's happened and what's going to happen going forward.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, don't call me ma'am. Mr. Military Man.
for the Southern habit. Well, if we're going back into my military background, I was in the National Guard my entire duration in with the state of North Carolina. I've wanted to join just about every branch there was. I knew I was going to be in the military. I just didn't know what I was going to do and where it was going to be. First off, I wanted to fly. I wanted to fly for as long as I can remember. Even lived for a time out on the Outer Banks, which celebrates the birth of flight. And just, it was very motivating. But before technology caught up well enough to correct my vision, you know, that was a big roadblock. So I switched my paths and decided I was going to go either into the Marines or the Army. And while I was in high school, I joined the ROTC there. We had a really good relationship with the local National Guard Armory. It's run by National Guardsmen who are also part of the local community. They're real people who really want to get involved with the people around them, who want to help support their state, not, you know, as well as their country. And they were enthusiastic as far as helping teach our program multiple skill sets in preparation for us finding our own paths to the military. Just about every kid in school has this story, but I ran into some trouble and they saw past that and wanted to help me become more than that. And I wanted to become more than what I was. And so I joined the National Guard so I could be a part of the same unit that had supported my high school. And that's how it all got started. A couple years later, we deployed to Iraq. I joined at 17. We were activated. I was 20 years old. I was in Iraq at 21 and came home at 22. Very, very long process for National Guard to deploy because we do not train every day to get everything done and to prep our missions. A lot of times we spend a lot more time away from our families and everything. And it was, in all, it was like a 15-month time period that we were away between train up and our overseas deployments. So it was weird that we were activated at 20. I came home at 22, and that was my first deployment. Spent some time trying to get through school, did some odd jobs, actually did some work for the National Guard as well in support of them. And a couple of years later, I did my second deployment to Kosovo for a peacekeeping mission. And that would be my last deployment because I endured my injuries over there to my feet. I suffered a minor TBI where I've got the stutter from. I came home and spent the remainder of my time in F4 Bragg, learning how to recover and how to be more than my injuries, and that was the end of my time. And I retired earlier this year.
So can I ask you a couple questions about that?
Yes, ma'am.
Is it usual that the National Guard is activated and deployed these days? Because I can remember, and of course I go way back to the Vietnam era, where people were in the National Guard. They were called up for things like the Kent State shootings. We had riots here in Northeast Ohio. They were called up for that. But I don't ever remember them being deployed overseas. Is that normal?
Yes, ma'am. It is quite normal. I would not go so far as quoting me for as spokesman for, you know, the National Guard in this regards, but we are the National Guard is quite active overseas. I actually one of my old squad leaders used to say, "This ain't your granddaddy's National Guard," you know. Right. And it's quite true. We the National Guard is terribly active. And terribly is improper word.
Well, that's okay. I think we get it.
We're quite active in country as well as outside of the country. Due to mission necessity, every state has units that are supporting missions everywhere around the country, and not just you know, combat related. You have peacekeeping missions. You have training in support of other countries, relief missions, and that's what the National Guard has come to support as well. The National Guard is very active in its role now. It is definitely not the National Guard of old.
So let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with retired Sergeant, National Guard Army Sergeant Mark Green. He was injured on deployment out of the country. When you came back and you started doing the rehab, before that, were you a cyclist? to begin with, because we're going to talk a little bit about what's happened for you recently in getting this bike that was donated through this organization. And that's sort of what brought me to you. Were you a cyclist? Did you like bicycling?
I not only never saw myself as a cyclist, I was the guy who lapped at the outfits.
you mean the Lycra?
It's just, you know, I if anybody ever asked me if I was if I had a bike, you know, I would respond that I had one with a motor on it. You know, that was as close as it came.
Well, and yet there is a picture of you that I have right in front of me that has you in a cycling jersey. So something changed for you, right?
Yeah, and I remember the first time my trainer told me that I would go cycling with him, and I said, "There's no way you're getting me into silly outfits." and what do you know? They got me in those silly outfits, and I never looked back. It's been one of the best decisions I've ever made. It's been one of the most challenging decisions I've ever made, and it's been one of the greatest life-altering decisions I've ever made.
Well, you alluded to the fact that your feet were injured, so clearly pedaling a regular bicycle doesn't work for you, and you are pedaling a hand cycle, or your, I don't know what else you'd call it. Tell us a little bit about the organization Hope for the Warriors, because they're the ones with whom you're working. You and somebody else, a Marine Corporal, Luis Quinones, also got a hand cycle not too long ago. It was just a couple of months ago.
Absolutely. First off, Luis is a good man, a great friend of mine. We've been riding together for a while. He's helped push me. Help motivate me, and whenever we're together, it's nothing but laughter. And that's another one of the reasons why I love cycling. Is the community. It's very supportive. It's very caring, and you meet so many wonderful people. As far as Hope for the Warriors, I don't even know where to begin. I met them last year when I was at the Warrior Transition Battalion for Bragg, and I did my first ride with them. I was on a recumbent. I had not yet transitioned to a hand cycle because we didn't. One, this was before we had gotten to that point, and two, we didn't realize how serious my injuries were. This was right after my first surgery, and I was in recovery of that. And my trainer, Robin, who is now the run coordinator for Hope for the Warriors, she put me on the recumbent, and I fell in love with cycling. It was just a great way to get out of my room, get involved with people again, and to give me some use of my feet again. But this was, I'd only had one surgery and I was recovering from that. Nobody, myself, my surgeons, nobody knew how serious this was going to, this was. I've had 5 surgeries at this point. And there's a possibility of a few more to take out some, metal that I have in my feet right now. And that, I mean, that's where we stand, and who knows down the road, for more corrective procedures. But I had my first ride with them that last year. We did some kayaking stuff with them, and they were terribly supportive of us, of the WTB, and it was fantastic. I got out and lost access to the adaptive equipment. This stuff isn't cheap.
No, it's not.
Thousands of dollars for these rides. You know, freshly retired on disability, not sure yet what type of work I can do. Wanted to get into school, but not sure yet what I can do in my condition. Didn't really know exactly what direction I was going to go yet. kind of spinning wheels, no pun intended. I get hit up from Hope of the Warriors, Robin's over there, and she's got a bike for me to ride. She's not letting me not ride it. I am going to ride it, and I've got a month to train up for a metric century.
Well, that's a month isn't too bad. It's 62 miles. You can do it.
I hadn't hand cycled in like 7 months, I think, and I did it. It was fantastic. I think we finished that ride in about 4 hours, stops included.
Nice.
And as soon as we crossed the finish line, there was somebody mentioned something about onto 100 miler. I don't know. they've provided equipment for me. They've continued to support me and make sure that I'm taken care of, that I'm able to continue to ride, because it's become more than riding. I started to slip backwards into depression. Just a lack of motivation is what it was. You go from feeling like you have some control, that you have a mission in life, that you have a purpose, and all of a sudden you get out and you're trying to figure out this new chapter, and nobody wakes up one morning and goes, I feel like trying disability out this year. That's what I want to do. I want to look into a job at Barnes and Nobles, and I love books. I've got a reading corner in my apartment. And I thought Barnes & Noble would be a nice, relaxing, quiet place for me to get back into the civilian world, make a little extra money, get out of the house. I can't even work there. You're on your feet all day. You're doing a lot of heavy lifting, and it's more active than I can be now. I didn't realize how much I use my feet till I can't use my feet. As soon as I got back on that bike, it's all of a sudden I realized that now I've got something I can like get back into. And I finished the biggest ride I've done since I started hand cycling. I'm getting ready to get back into school. I'm starting to, this semester, I've got a new career path in mind. I want to be a marine biologist. I've got a girlfriend. Hand cycling is so much more. And Hope for the Warriors, I mean, they are everything that they're name means. They are hope. They have given me so much more, and I look forward to hitting every ride I can with them this year on my own equipment, being able to challenge myself, being able to go out and train and hit bigger rides and meet more people, even seeing how I can help my community and get others involved. We want to try to get a group together this year and see how many people we can get. I want to see how I can get involved with that. I could go on and on about this organization. They're fantastic.
How do they find out about the people who need, they have a lot of services. It's not just their fitness stuff. They have clinical health and wellness, transition services, community development and engagement. And I assume that this picture I see here of the two recumbents, probably one is youth sports and recreation, which is where the hand cycle would fall. But there are some other things that they do. How do they find out about soldiers like you?
I was a special case in that somebody knew about me.
Uh-huh.
One of the individuals in the organization knew me from the Warrior Transition Battalion, and knew that I was in dire need of getting back on the road and that I didn't have access to the equipment anymore. She found out that they had the equipment, and she went, get your butt off the couch, you're riding again. And I said, yes, ma'am. They want to help people, and they do what they can to reach out as they can in what capacity they can. But you can't help people that don't want help. It takes warriors. It takes us veterans being able to lay down our pride and go, we need help. It takes that realization of knowing that, it's okay to seek help. And partly sometimes there's a lack of knowledge of, well, I didn't know that there was this organization out there. I didn't know that I could get help. Sometimes you can know that these resources are out there and kind of not wrap your head around the fact that they can help you. Sometimes you feel like you're in a different level and your unique situation puts you outside their field. So you're afraid to ask for help. And that makes it difficult because people aren't reaching out. I'm sure they do their best to try to reach out and find people, but you know, you can't help people that don't want help. So
that's true.
That's something that I'm trying to, you know, like stuff like this.
Right. Sure.
Where getting that media outlook, getting that, you know, that face to the public of, hey, this is what we do. This is what they do.
Let me ask you a question about the bike itself. So you were presented with this hand cycle. It was custom built for you.
Mm-hmm.
Who made that bike? Do you know?
You hit it. You did hit it right. These bikes are custom made to order because they are adapted equipment. They are, each one is handmade. It's not a go to the website, click buy order. You actually get the paper form, sit down, and go, this is the type of gear ratio we want. This is the equipment that we want to go into. These are the type of wheels. So we are going to hand build this bike and send it in. The bike itself is most likely going to be a top end hand cycle. I've used their hand cycles in the past. These are the hand cycles that I've seen built before.
Looking at the bike, it's really beautiful. I can see it. And we'll post some pictures of it on our site. It's really, really cool looking. How heavy is it? Do you have any idea?
If I remember correctly, I want to say around 25 to 30 pounds.
Ooh, that's not bad.
Depending on the frame, like if it's like a carbon frame,
right?
The type of wheels that they put on.
Right.
Yes,
what do you weigh?
I weigh about 180, 185 pounds on a good day.
Yeah. Okay. I got it. Well, So what's your next event? Where are you going next?
So I do not have anything planned right now. I am no good in the cold. I have a lot of metal in my feet. And even though I don't use my feet on the hand cycle, even on a good day, like on a, you know, a warm day, you know, middle of the year, I have to be held out of the hand cycle, being immobile for so long. The lack of circulation down there. Sometimes I've had to been dragged out of the hand cycle, and it's difficult to stand on my own.
I see.
In the cold, like we did, it was only a 5K down in Charlotte, and it had been raining. I think it may have been 40 degrees or so. I could barely finish that. And we're also talking about trying to shift gears with your hands.
Right.
In the cold, I'm no good in the winter. I'm going to take some time to start a new diet regimen within this month because, I can't run. Cardio's harder for me, so I'm trying to see what I can do to get a little bit more control on my weight in preparation for this year because I do want to complete a century ride. And in preparation for that, I'll also start doing some upper body. Once it starts getting warmer, then we'll start doing some train up on the road and prepare for more local events. I've got nothing planned otherwise right now.
Well, I really appreciate you taking some time today to talk with me. The organization, again, is hopeforthewarriors.org. I've been speaking with retired National Guard Army Sergeant Mark Green, and I wish you a lot of luck. You can do this century. If you did your metric, you'll be fine.
Well, thank you very much. I have truly enjoyed our talk and being able to share a little bit about my journey as well. This has been truly enjoyable.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. Have a very happy new year. Good luck with all of your new choices, and keep riding.
Thank you very much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sergeant Green joined me from his home in North Carolina. If you're interested in the work of Hope for the Warriors, log on to hopeforthewarriors.org. And if you scroll down a bit, I think it's Mark on one of the two recumbents in the sports and fitness section. So we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to mosey on out to Portland, Oregon for a chat with frame builder Tony Pereira. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
We are back. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. When Tony Pereira realized there was such a thing as a custom bike, he said, "Yep, that's for me," and he never looked back. Today, he and his partner, Ira Ryan, originally building separately under their own names, are now the two halves of Breadwinner Cycles. Here's our conversation. Hello, Tony. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me today, and Happy New Year.
Thanks for having me. Happy New Year to you as well.
Well, I'm pretty excited because I've been reading your story on the Breadwinner Cycles website. And, you know, we often say on this show that certain people are born with the bicycle gene, and I think you're one of them.
You said that in your email. I wasn't exactly sure what you were referring to.
That's what it is.
I think you're right.
give our listeners a bit of your background and how you landed in Portland.
I grew up in Connecticut for the most part and worked in ski retail, which transitioned into bike retail. After college, I moved to Salt Lake City, where I skied and worked in the outdoor industry, mostly ski and bike shops. And at some point along the way, I got pretty bored with being a bike mechanic. And as a lifelong tinkerer and maker, I started figuring out how to build bicycles. That was around 2002. Once I figured out how to build a bike and figured out that it was possible, I knew that I had found my thing and started building bikes there in Salt Lake City. And in 2005, I moved to Portland so that my then girlfriend could go to grad school. And we planned to move back to Salt Lake, but after about 6 months, we knew that we had found our place. So been here ever since. It's been almost 14 years now.
Yeah, time flies.
It sure does. I think I've lived here longer than anywhere else in my life. So
I know what you mean. I'm in the house right now that I've lived in longer than anywhere in my life. That's really bizarre. So Give us a little overview of Breadwinner, because it's you know, I talked to lots of frame builders. They're all very specific about what they do, what they love. Breadwinner is a little different from some of the other people I talked to, and I'm really interested in the way you look at frame design. But give us an overview of the company.
Breadwinner is kind of a reboot for both myself and my partner, Ira Ryan. We both did the traditional, you know, one-man show frame building thing for, you know, we each did it for about 8 years. We were on a very similar trajectory. At that time, going back, we collaborated on a project with Rafa. And they approached us and asked us to work to build a bike, collaborate on a bike that they would help us market. And we did that. We really enjoyed working together. And it was a time when we were both searching for how to grow our businesses and what to do next and try to evolve what we were doing a little bit. We both had found that one man shop frame building thing had grown as much as it was going to grow for both of us. And we thought, hey, let's figure out what we can do, whatever that may be, to work together and kind of reboot and see what version 2.0 looks like. And we threw a lot of ideas around. We worked on it for the better part of a year, maybe even longer than that. And one of the key things that we identified that was really wrong with our old businesses was the lead time.
Was the what?
The lead time.
Okay. Yes.
We had long, yes. We both had long waiting lists that were 12 to 18 months. And we acknowledged that during that time, there was a lot of opportunity for something to go wrong. Either, you know, just the smallest miscommunication or to miss a deadline or things to get pushed back. Deadlines were always getting blown by. And, you know, at the end of that process, it was hard to have a happy customer. We had plenty of happy customers, don't get me wrong, but there were enough that were unhappy or, you know, dissatisfied with that long, long lead period. I know personally, I couldn't do it. I can't imagine ordering a bike and waiting 2 years to get it.
Or 5 years or whatever it is with some people.
Yeah, you know, right. I know some people do that.
I know.
That I really can't imagine.
Really?
When we set out to figure out what breadwinner was going to be, that was the number one thing. All right. We want to build bikes. We want to build custom bikes, all custom bikes. And we want them to be the kind of bikes that we like to ride. Just something that we had both done with our previous brands. But we wanted to deliver them a lot more quickly. So that decided that we needed to do TIG welded bikes instead of brazed bikes, which we had both done in the past. I had mostly done lug bikes. I'd mostly done fillet brazed bikes. And we decided that we were going to TIG weld these bikes primarily. We still do some brazing and our promise is an 8 to 12 week delivery time.
And that's where I see you as so different. Let me ask you a couple quick, back up a second. So what names were you working under before you joined and became Breadwinner?
So we were both eponymous. So I was Pereira Cycles. He was Ira Ryan Cycles.
There you go. I mean,
like so many builders.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And it fits well. And, we had a couple of people tell us we were crazy, you know, putting those old brands to bed because they were relatively successful and, you know, in that little sphere. But we knew that we wanted this to be a little different and something that we could grow in a different way that didn't have our names attached to it.
And I like Breadwinner. How'd you come up with that name?
It's kind of a funny story. When we did that Rafa project that I told you about, we needed a business entity to, you know, to set up a bank account and, you know, have our partnership around. And it wasn't something that we really should have been losing sleep over, but Ira woke up in the middle of the night thinking about it one night and Breadwinner popped into his head. We were both, I think I had just had my son was born just right around that time. Ira had just gotten married. We were both kind of like looking into our future and, the importance of being breadwinners. So it was a name that we threw on our bank account to start with. And then when we actually had to come up with a brand name for Breadwinner, we kept coming back to it. We really liked it. When Breadwinner began, we had six models. Three of them were kind of utilitarian and three of them were more performance oriented. And they felt like kind of the bread half of it and the winner half of it. So it had this nice duality to it. And the name rung true for us and we just decided to go with it. Every other name we came up with fell flat. So we stuck with Breadwinner.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Tony Pereira. He is half of Breadwinner. He might be the bread or the winner, or he might be both, whatever. He's a half a loaf.
These days I feel like I'm more of the bread.
Which is okay too. So you said you were both brazing and fillet brazing. And you decided to do TIG. Was there a learning curve there? Were you already TIG welding? I know there's a difference.
Yeah, there's a big difference. And truth be told, it's no secret. We have a welder that does the welding for us, the finish welding. That's Christopher Eigelhart.
I know him.
Well known in his own right.
Yes, he is.
And his shop's right across the street from us. Which is actually how we found our shop. We were previously working out of our garages. Both Ira and I, we had half the stuff in his shop and half the stuff in my shop. And then we would run frames over to Chris to have him weld them. And he's been welding for us since the very beginning. So one day we were over here dropping frames off, and we noticed that the shop, the building across the street from him, was for lease. We snatched it up, and now we're right across the street from him. And that works out really well. I can TIG weld pretty well. I do all the tacking. That's one of my jobs in the production process. But when the finish welding needs to happen, they go over to Chris.
So the thing we talked about was lead times. That was the thing that was annoying to you. And it's annoying to customers who, you know, want to walk into a store and buy a bike.
Well, and these days we're so used to, you know, Amazon.
Right. Exactly.
Having stuff the next day. So
no, right away, the drone will drop it on your head. So
yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So now you are still, the website still says within 8 to 12 weeks. And so how are you doing that, including paint and build? You know, everybody thinks that the really hard part is the brazing or the welding, and it's not. It's the finish work and the paint and the build.
Yeah. Yeah. So we do outsource our painting. And we've got a great painter. We've been working with the same crew since the beginning. It's an outfit called Colorworks down in Eugene, Oregon, which is not that close. But Eric, the owner, runs up back and forth from Eugene to Portland. It's about 90 miles away from here. So he makes a trip once a week. But as far as to answer your question, we build 3 bikes a week, and we just keep rolling through them. As soon as an order comes in, Ira gets in touch with the customer, and we start the design process. We start talking about paint, components, and all the things that go into a bike, and just keep the ball moving. Every once in a while, we don't make the deadline, and it's often because we're waiting for some back-ordered part to show up.
You mean like Shimano?
I didn't say it.
I know. It was a smart-ass remark, but
You've heard this story before.
Oh, I was in retail for 40 years, so I know all about that stuff.
You know, and I don't – it's easy to blame Shimano. But, you know, the way that they're set up to do business, it's not to work with people like us, where I'm ordering a crank set or a group set or two or three at a time. They're set up for people that do pre-orders and – forecast that, okay, I'm going to need 200 Ultegra Grupos this year. There's my order.
Right. Right.
You know, so we kind of get what's left over after Santa Cruz and, you know, Comotion and whoever else does all their pre-orders. So,
and then there's the shops that get the leftovers from what you order. So, you know.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that works.
Oh,
but yes,
it's ugly sometimes.
I think you're right. Yeah, it's ugly very ugly sometimes. For us sometimes too. You know, we fill in here and there as we need to. But anyway, that's usually what will hold us up more than anything. But yeah, we've got a pretty good system. We, like I said, we do about 3 bikes a week. Sometimes it's two or 3 bikes a week. We start on Monday. We have mitering Monday.
Where we
miter all the tubes and get them ready to go. Tacking Tuesday.
Boy, very alliterative, Tony. Nice.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, there's a hitch, but we get through it. Welding Wednesday, and then seat stay Thursday, where we put the seat stays
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah, I got it.
And then finishing Friday.
Nice. So we have to come up with something with T for Thursday with seat stays.
Yeah, we just have to list.
Yeah,
it out.
I know. Yeah, list. There it is. Can you hang with me? We're going to take a real quick break.
Sure.
All right. We're talking with Tony Pereira of Breadwinner Cycles. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back because I want to talk to him about his process, which is very interesting. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. If you're just joining me, I'm talking with Tony Pereira out in Portland, Oregon, Breadwinner Cycles. We don't know if he's the bread or the winner or half a loaf or a full loaf. So before the break, we were talking about your sort of alliterative process, beginning with, I forgot already what Monday was.
Mitering Monday.
I should remember how the process goes. I watch it in the shop. Mitering Monday, and we end up with Finishing Friday. So
that's right.
I want to talk a little bit about your actual bike builder page. It's very interesting. And so what I did was I kind of like took the B road frame that you make.
Yes.
And that it's custom. And yet all the chainstay, head and seat angles, and rake are all pre-specified. So how does that happen when you get a 65 centimeter dude guy and a 46 centimeter dude person and they all want to be road frame?
We change them.
Okay. Well, that blew that theory right out of the water.
You sent me that email the other day with some of the pre-questions.
Right.
And I saw that question. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that was still on there. So we tried to give an illustration of, people want that, they want some idea of what the bike's going to be. But, you know, as you pointed out at the high end, you know, the 63 centimeter versus the low end, the 46 centimeter, something's going to change.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
But most people are getting, you know, 53 to 56.
True. I guess true.
So, and those tend to be this similar. So the head angle tends to be, you know, 72 and a half.
Right.
And the C-tube angle tends to be 73, but we change it as we need. So they're every single bike is custom and made and designed for each rider. We change things as we need to. We typically keep the same drop. We usually keep the same chainstay length. The rake is usually determined by the fork.
Sure.
Because we typically use a carbon forks or suspension forks. But yeah, they're all made for each individual rider. Sometimes we'll have somebody come along that says, you know, I really want the drop to be a little bit different. The bottom bracket drop.
Mm-hmm, right.
And, you know, and we'll discuss that and see if it's a valid request. And we'll even change something like that if we really need to.
Okay.
But you know, we have an idea of some of the characteristics we want our bikes to have. And, you know, we're trying to get them to, you know, we want a B road to ride like a B road, whether it's a 46 or a 64.
So that brings up the question, what makes breadwinner bikes ride differently from or special to that person ordering one?
Well, if compared to other bike makers.
Yeah. What makes a breadwinner a breadwinner?
Well, we ride the bikes. So we know that they ride well. And we like them to be comfortable. We're more of the, you know, long ride on dirt roads, ride on gravel. You know, we've been doing that since before it was a thing. And, I'm actually more of a mountain biker. I like to, you know, I like my bikes to handle really well on single track. And so as I mentioned before, they're all bikes that we like to ride. We want them to ride a certain way. We want them to ride well and be really fun to ride, lively, comfortable. So those are our main goals, is just know that the bike is going to ride well. We were just talking about this the other day, and you know, people are always telling us, man, I don't know what it is, but this bike just has this magical feel to it and I've never felt anything like it. And I think the big thing there is that we're using the best materials we can get. And we're not trying to make the bikes overly stiff.
How about tire width?
Tire width is, their tires are getting wider and wider and wider.
Right.
And, you know, I have personally found that I'm really enjoying the wider tires. This will be a good segue into the newer stuff that we're doing now. But we started doing, you know, several years ago, a gravel bike, and then. About a year ago, we did a wider tire gravel bike, and that bike is the G Road, and it fits up to a 2.1 inch tire.
Nice.
And again, as a mountain biker, I've been mountain biking since the 80s. It reminds me of those old mountain bikes. This nice, real nice, lively bike, rigid fork, 2 inch tires, a really, really fun bike. But you put a smoother tire on it, even a wide one. My last G Road, I recently sold it. Need to get on another one for myself. But, I had 50 millimeter Schwalbe G1, what they call it, G1 all road. They're smoother tire. I can't remember. I'm slipping my mind right now, but, fairly smooth, but still very wide 2-inch tire. And I was doing road centuries with my friends on their road bikes and no trouble keeping up, but it never felt like it was holding me back in any way. And I was super comfortable the whole time.
I rest my case, counselor. We've been talking about this for years. Put wider tires on the bike. It doesn't slow you down.
It doesn't. I mean, at some point it does. Clearly,
of course.
If it didn't slow you down, professional road racers would be riding on wide tires.
Well, they will be.
They are less aerodynamic.
True.
They are heavier, but those things don't matter most of the time.
How about disc brakes on road bikes? What do you think about that?
I love disc brakes.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I do. I'm a mountain biker. My roots are
mountain biking. True.
So I've been riding on disc brakes for 20 years and they're not foreign to me. I'm very comfortable with them. I'm comfortable setting them up and any of the maintenance, which is very little that goes into them. I love the stopping power. And out here where it's very wet and we ride in the wet,
right?
You don't have your rims wearing out.
True. All right.
They work great with carbon rims. But I will say on the winter side of things, Ira is a bit of a Luddite. He loves rim brakes. He likes candies on his cross bike and he rides a rim brake road bike. And, he likes the disc brakes just fine, but he's also more on the side of, I like the rim brakes. I've always used them. They work for me. So, we do them both ways. However, we build what our customers ask for. And if you look at the frames that just got back from paint, they're all disc brake bikes.
Yeah. Well, you know what my husband says? You're trying to go fast. What are you using your brakes for anyway?
Brakes just slow you down.
That's right. Let me remind our listeners again, we're speaking with Tony Pereira from Breadwinner Cycles. We're going to take a left turn. So what's up with you? Full-time frame building and now you had to open a cafe, right?
Yep.
The Breadwinner Cafe. Tell us about the Breadwinner Cafe.
Possibly the worst idea I've ever had.
Oh, see, but I can agree with that. We had a coffee shop for 7 years. It almost took the whole operation under.
Oh, is that right?
Yep. Way back when.
Well, we are about a year in and it's been growing and, I still have high hopes that it's going to work out. We've always aspired to have this set up. And the idea is that we wanted to have a soft landing spot for people to come in and visit us. And we wanted to make what we do a little bit more approachable. A lot of bike shops, bike shops you can just walk into, right? And
right.
You can see what's there. And as intimidating as they are, the idea is that you want your customers to feel welcome. And we've only had workshops. And before this place, they were our garages. And it was not a welcoming environment. There was not a reception area. We wanted something, again, a nice landing spot for folks to come in and see what we were doing. And not just people that were going to place an order, people that just thought it was fun and cool. Yeah. we've always had people, asking to come by and check the shop out. And it was always inconvenient for us. And I don't know, it was hard to put on much of a show for anybody. So this was what we decided we would do.
So you can see the workshop. You can see the workshop from the coffee shop.
There's a big 8-foot wide window that, with a counter underneath it.
Nice.
You can sit there and have your lunch or your breakfast and your coffee or beer, wine. We've got a full menu here. And,
wow.
Watch what we're doing.
And who runs the cafe?
We hired a guy named John Pettit who has been a chef for 20 or so years, in a bunch of different kinds of restaurants. He and his family moved up here, a couple of years ago. His wife works at Nike. And, he has a lot of freedom to do what he would like in a little cafe environment like this. And, it's not full on crazy restaurant life that he went away from when he left that business.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He's a cyclist and a very, very avid cyclist and racer. And, he appreciates being part of this bike business and still able to do the restaurant business that he knows so well.
Yeah, sounds like a good match, a really good
match. It's a perfect match. It's a really good match. And we have a small staff of baristas. We've got four right now in addition to him. You know, it's a slow season right now, but we have people meet up here for rides, and we do occasional events. It's something we want to do more of this year.
Nice.
Yeah.
So
fun little community space.
Cool. It sounds like it. And the picture is nice on the website. I can see it. What do you do when you're not making bikes or riding bikes, Tony?
I have an 8-year-old son, and I spend a lot of time with him when I'm not at work. And he's a mountain biker. We get to ride bikes together a lot. It's really fun. And I also really love motorcycles.
Aha.
I have a couple of
now it
bikes
comes that... out the dark side.
The dark side,
right.
The fun side.
That's cool. What kind of motorcycles are they?
I have two. I have an old Yamaha that I've had for many years that I found in a dump and built into a cafe racer.
Nice.
It's a Yamaha XS650. It's kind of a classic styled bike. And then this past summer, I got an older Ducati.
I knew you were going to say that.
Kind of a sport bike.
I knew it. I would have said it if you didn't say it first. I'm like, oh, you probably
That's
got
funny.
A Ducati. Yeah,
well,
right.
You know, it's got a steel frame.
Right. Of course. It's a real bike.
Yep. It's a blast. I love it.
Good.
Really fun.
Well, before we go, I always ask my friendly frame builders three questions, and other people too. What's your favorite food?
I don't know if I have a particularly favorite food. We are very blessed here in Portland. We've got a great restaurant scene and food scene. There's lots of great local, delicious things to eat. And I love trying different things. And, I'm not going to pick just one.
Okay. What music do you like?
I'm a little all over the place. I definitely have classic rock roots. I listen to a lot of hip hop and I like jazz a lot too.
Oh, that's good. All right. My most favorite question. Do you have any pets?
I do not currently have any pets.
Mm-hmm. So no shop dog, no shop cat, no shop mouse.
No.
Okay. Well, maybe in the future.
Maybe in the future.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, go ahead.
I have had a cat. I don't have a cat anymore.
I don't want to know what happened to her, him. I keep telling Brian to get a shop cat to share with the guy next door because they seem to have, you know, they're in an industrial kind of thing, like you probably used to be, like your garage. And so, I keep saying, you know, you guys have mice. Go get a cat. They're like, yeah, maybe. But I can't convince them because we have dogs at home. We're not going to have a cat. Well, Tony, this has just been wonderful. Thank you so much for talking with me. I have been talking with Tony Pereira from Breadwinner Cycles in Portland, Oregon. Tell my listeners how they can find out more about you.
We are online at breadwinnercycles.com. And you can find us on Instagram and Facebook as well. Or come by the cafe in Portland.
Well, next time I'm in Oregon, I absolutely will. That sounds like fun. I'd love to see somebody who's doing a good job with it. We thought we were, but it didn't work out. But, you know,
please
that's the
do.
Way it goes.
I would love to show you around.
That would be great. Thanks so much. Have a great year. And thanks for talking with me.
Thank you, Diane.
All right.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Tony Pereira joined me from the offices of Breadwinner Cycles in Portland, Oregon. If you're interested in their frames, their process, and want to take a peek into their workshop and cafe, you can log on to breadwinnercycles.com. My thanks to Tony and to retired National Guard Sergeant Mark Green for joining me on the show this week. Next week, we'll be having a conversation with Professor Roger Gillis about his book, Women on the Move, The Forgotten Era of Women's Bicycle Racing. Remember that you can always join the conversation on our Facebook page. You can send us a tweet at Outspoken Cyclist without an E, or leave a comment on our blog site, OutspokenCyclist.com. You can subscribe to the Outspoken Cyclist podcast on your smart device, or hear us streaming at 6 p.m. Eastern Time from the studios at John Carroll University at WJCU.org. As we begin another year of the Outspoken Cyclist podcasts, I'd like to remind you that the Outspoken Cyclist is a listener-supported show. If you enjoy the show and find value in it, won't you please consider making a donation at OutspokenCyclist.com. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe out there, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.